I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 3rd of March. Mondays at 1 o'clock, all things political. And today, Joan Walsh will be joining us, editor-at-large of Salon, author of What's the Matter with White People? Finding Our Way in the Next America. She appears regularly on MSNBC, and she's a Wisconsin gal, graduate of Shorewood High School, bachelor's in history from UW-Madison. We have a lot to talk about with her. Today, she wrote a piece on Scott Walker, headlined, Scott Walker's Little-Known Scandal, When He Treated Welfare Recipients Like Dogs. She also has written about Jan Brewer and says, for whatever reason, Jan Brewer does the right thing in Arizona. The Right's Ugly Food Stamp Obsession is back. We'll talk to her a little bit about Ukraine, although we'll be spending a full hour on that subject a little later this week. The presidential delegation to the Sochi Paralympics has been canceled. Is that the right move? And she was tweeting during the Oscars last night and had special mention of Lupita Nyong'o's beautiful acceptance speech. We will talk about that. Here is how you reach us for on-air participation this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And a reminder that today is the last day of our winter pledge drive at 6 o'clock tonight. That's all she wrote. So please pledge during this hour, your final chance to pledge for all things political during this drive. Our pledge number is 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552, and you can always go to WPR.org as well. Hello, Joan. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Thanks for having me again.
Before we talk about Scott Walker, which we will in a moment, let's talk about the Oscars for just a moment. I know you tweeted, and I was so moved. I was crying last night when I heard Lupita's comments. They were so beautiful, weren't they?
They were so beautiful, and it really is so rare. I mean, she managed to just sum up perfectly, you know, the joy, the paradox of the joy she's experienced portraying the horrors that someone else lived. And, you know, Hollywood gets, it can often be so narcissistic and self-referential mm-hmm. that to be reminded of the people behind that story, it shouldn't be a rare moment, but it was. And she was so heartfelt and genuine, I think. People were really moved.
I have not yet seen the film, and I was thinking it's too hard for me to see this. And then last night I realized it's supposed to be too hard to see. We have to see it.
It is. I've thought a lot about that. Obviously, we're not talking about movies today, but the one thing I'll say is I wish there was a way to get people. It is hard to watch, but it's also an amazing movie, and I had a friend break that down to me, and I realized not only was it my obligation to see it, but that I wanted to see it, and as a moviegoer, it's an amazing movie. So, you know, it's almost intolerable, but the art redeems it, and I just want to get more people to actually take the step of seeing it, and especially more white people.
All right. So, it's done.
My little PSA for the day.
Thank you, Joan. We'll follow your advice. Let's talk about Scott Walker. In not today's piece, but an earlier piece, you quoted Politico, which saying the Scott Walker scandal was a snoozer with no crotch shots, no mistress in Argentina, and no political vendettas featuring a bridge. It's not that sexy. I'm wondering, and you have written pretty extensively about this, including a very lengthy piece today about his time as county executive here in Milwaukee and also looking at the issue of race, which is a very important issue right here. Let's start, though, with this idea that it's a snoozer, that people think nationally it's not worth covering. Is it because it doesn't have that mistress in Argentina or the bridge?
I think there's that. I will also say, as a, you know, Wisconsin chauvinist, I've encountered this green room, at MSNBC attitude, not to expose my beloved friends and colleagues, but there is this kind of funny attitude that, like, well, you know, though that John Doe investigation and those campaign laws, they're so Wisconsin. You know, Wisconsin is squeaky clean, and the things that, you know, Scott Walker's staff did, well, they might not even be crimes in other states. So, you know, there's a big kind of who cares factor. And, you know, I find that kind of unbelievable because the extent to which we now know there was a secret email system. There was a lot of coordinated effort by top people to skirt the law, to evade the law, and to go ahead and mix campaign business with the public's business. I thought it would get more attention. I thought it would continue to bubble. And I particularly thought that, you know, the casual racism
yes.
that was exposed in those emails on top of the law breaking that we know about and the fact that six people were convicted, the casual racism got shrugged off, too.
I was surprised by that as well. I find it absolutely abhorrent, the race. And it's not just in these emails. There have been other instances of having to fire aides because of racist statements they have made as well. It's hard to believe that somebody, no matter what your political persuasion, that you would be sensitive enough to all human beings to not make these kinds of comments or endorse them.
Well, it really does speak to the kind of environment that he fostered because, look, you know, race is a controversial issue, and some other Republicans may have issues with race, but you don't have this epidemic of, you know, staffer after staffer fired or reprimanded for racist tweets. And, I mean, the sheer number, other people at least, they either know enough to hide it or they don't harbor those attitudes in the first place, but this is really quite a lot of smoke, and you just wonder where people got the idea that these kinds of attitudes are acceptable and that joking about them on the public dime is acceptable.
Mm-hmm. Today you wrote rather extensively about Scott Walker's time as county executive. The headline is pretty strong, Scott Walker's mm-hmm. little-known scandal when he treated welfare recipients like dogs.
Well, that actually came from a Milwaukee County elected official who did not want to go on the record, but who, I talked to a lot of people who were really scandalized by that particular email where Kelly Rindfleisch shares a joke about welfare recipients are like dogs because they don't know who their daddies are and they're mixed colors and lazy and all these other things, and they get welfare. People have been complaining that it's not okay. That's a terrible racist joke, but really, it's worse when you think about Scott Walker's practices as Milwaukee County Executive. He actually ran the county's welfare programs, which basically administer state and federal funding mostly. He ran them so poorly that the state had to step in and take control of them. The only one of 72 counties that happened to, and you know, it was a roiling scandal in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel for at least a year before the state took that action, and really no corrective action on his part. He in fact used some of the troubles as an excuse to try to privatize some of Milwaukee social services, and when he couldn't do that, he threw up his hands and said to the state, all right, come on in and take over, which, you know, other county officials were horrified by. You know, most counties and even most conservatives, right, want local control. County control is a principle of Wisconsin state government, as it is in other states. And, you know, he was happy surrendering that headache. And I think it does speak to a lack of compassion for the poor. I mean, 95% of calls to a client intake center weren't being answered at all. Poor people calling, asking, how do I get food stamps? How do I get some kind of help? Their calls just going unanswered, lots of other things like that. And it really spoke to an indifference to the poor people that were among his constituents, I think, and other people think.
And yet he was elected governor, and he survived a recall attempt.
He was even reelected as Milwaukee County executive. So, there's clearly a little bit more widespread indifference to those problems of the poor than we would like to see. But I think especially as this 2016 Republican field is both crowded, but it's also crowded with people who have problems, he's still considered a possible contender. And I think that episodes like that in his background really deserve more attention.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that because of some attention that's been focused on all of this, he is no longer a contender for 2016? Same is true of Chris Christie, or are they both still possibilities, Joan?
Well, I think they're both possibilities because the field is so weak without them. But I think I say that they are certainly possibilities. I personally don't think that either of them at this point are going to be successful candidates, because I think, you know, first Christie really relied on, I don't consider him a moderate, but in this Republican Party he's in the middle of the spectrum and not popular with the base, but he was going to really rely on his popularity with donors and with the establishment GOP to say to other Republicans, get out of the way because I'm the only one who can raise money and win. Once he became so damaged by scandal, he's not a good bet for the donor class. They're going to have to take a second and third and fourth look. He's going to be tied up legally for a while, and that's when you have this little mini boom for just a few weeks of, well, maybe Scott Walker is now the front runner. I mean, Politico floated that at one point. So did Larry Sabato. So a couple of you know, nationally renowned people have put their money, at least temporarily, on Walker. And then this scandal came along, and I think that his ongoing legal troubles, because there is another John Doe investigation. It may not touch him personally, but, you know, he becomes a person who, again, is potentially, donors don't like that kind of uncertainty in somebody's political future, that, you know, they've got lawyers working for them, and who knows when another shoe may drop. And I think it harms both of them in that early, you know, the first primary before the primary starts is really the early money primary. And I think it makes it hard for them both to pitch donors and say, you know, I'm the squeaky clean guy who's going to clear the field. Neither of them can do that right now.
Well, we'll ask our audience what they think of that continuing story. Our phone number for all things political. We'll talk about what happened in Arizona, what happened in Texas. Very interesting events in both of those states last week. We will touch on Ukraine and ask Joan, although we're doing a full show on that later this week, if she's worried. It's like we're back in the middle of this big Cold War. What's going on? We'll talk a little bit about that. She has written about what she calls the right's ugly food stamp obsession. Why has that happened? We want to look a little bit at health care. You know, we're rapidly nearing the health care enrollment date of March 31st. How are things going? Does she think they're going well or not? Here's how you reach us on air, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And just a reminder that we're in our winter membership drive at 6 o'clock tonight. The baby's over. This would be a great hour for you to pledge because we talk politics so frequently, and I think we do it quite thoroughly. To pledge, 888-202-2552. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll continue with Joan Walsh, editor-at-large at Salon, MSNBC commentator. And I always love to say, and it's amazing how many of our guests have Wisconsin connections. She's a graduate of Shorewood High School and also a graduate of UW-Madison in history. I'm Kathleen Dunn with KP Whaley. And today, in case you didn't know it, is the final day of our winter membership drive. So we ask you to support programs like All Things Political that you enjoy. And when you pledge today, you'll also be entered into a drawing for an iPad Air. This could be your lucky day. It's a great time to support the programs you value. And here's how you do it. It is at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Hello, KP.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks. You know, last hour we heard from 27 listeners, and we want to thank each of them for their pledges. But are you ready for this, Kathleen?
I'm ready.
Our goal this hour is 45 pledges.
All right.
Until 2 o'clock. So these goals are really set up to make sure that Wisconsin Public Radio has the money to pay for the programs that you rely on. And with this being the last day of the drive, we really need your help meeting that goal. Make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
At the end of the hour, we so often hear our guests say, thanks for your great listeners. And it's wonderful praise, and it's so true because you're thoughtful, you're active listeners, and of course we thank you for contributing to the quality of WPR programs with all of your questions and comments. We love taking your questions. And thank you for your financial support. It makes it all possible. If you haven't pledged yet, do it now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And giving really just takes a few minutes of your time. All you need to do is tell us your name, your contact information, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay it. And you can give now in just one lump sum, or even better, you can become a monthly sustainer. Sustainers are fantastic for WPR and easy and convenient for you. But no matter how you choose to give or how much you give, use the next few minutes to support the station that you really count on. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I'm Karen from Madison, Wisconsin. I'm a sustainer of Wisconsin Public Radio. I've listened to public radio since I was a law school student 33 years ago. Wherever I've moved, I've made sure that one of the first things I did was find my public radio outlet. And I'm one of those people that wants to make sure I pay my own way. I realized that the best thing about being a sustaining member is that you can just totally turn off the guilt button. One of the benefits of having sustaining members is it's a guaranteed steady flow of income to the station that allows the station to make commitments to upgrade technology and better serve the listeners. I enjoy being a sustainer, and I think you will too.
Pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn. KP Whaley is here, and we are asking for your support of WPR. Last day of our winter membership drive. Your gift may be, I don't know, $10 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose is a good amount, and here's how you do it. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Whoops, there we go.
Don't forget, everyone who pledges today will be entered into a drawing for an iPad Air, and you could be that lucky winner. When you make your pledge right now of any amount, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you don't have to pledge to participate. All you do is send a postcard, name, address, email, telephone to WPR. iPad Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Send a postcard or make a pledge right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, we don't expect any one listener or even 100 listeners to carry off all of the costs for this program. In fact, there's an advantage to having the bulk of our budget come from thousands of listeners just like you.
Yeah, how true. We have a wide base of support. When that happens, it makes for a much more stable organization. So join in and become a member. You decide the amount. $5 a month is a great starting place. Pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, you should also find out if your employer matches your donation. Many organizations do give money to WPR by matching your pledge. So just pledge now and then ask your Human Resources Department the next time you get a chance.
And we're looking for how many, KP?
40. Well, we have a goal of 45, okay. A pretty significant goal.
Okay.
And we're about a quarter of the way there.
All right. All right. So we're getting there. So please make your donation now.
WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Don't forget, it's the last day. This is your last hour to pledge for all things political. We're going to go to your phone calls for Joan Walsh in just one moment. And you can be entered for a drawing for an iPad Air. And sustainers, don't worry about it. We have you automatically entered.
And you can show off your WPR pride with our WPR logo T-shirt. It features our brand new logo. And it's yours for just a pledge of $120. If you're a sustainer, that's only $10 a month. So it's a very affordable pledge, and you can do that now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I like Catherine from Kenosha's comment, KP. I've been a donor for years. WPR goes on in the morning, and it stays with me throughout the day. I can't pick one program that I like better than the next. Thanks for the company.
That's
There's
correct.
Nothing like good company, right?
Exactly. And I'm just like Catherine. Whether I work here or not, I'm listening to WPR all the time.
Good for you. Thank you. Thanks, KP. And we're going to welcome phone calls again. The number for pledging, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Joan Walsh is with us. Joan is a graduate of Shorewood High School, in case you didn't know that, and she graduated in history from UW-Madison, editor-at-large of Salon, author of What's the Matter with White People? Finding Our Way in the Next America. She's written extensively about Scott Walker, one of the few national reporters to have done so, and we'll branch into other topics as we carry on here. Let's go to some of your phone calls. Tom in Stevens Point is our first caller. Hi, Tom.
Good morning or good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I just wanted to follow up on Joan talking about the MSNBC green room. I've observed watching MSNBC over the years that some of their hosts, and Joan's a guest on some of their shows, kind of report the news as they want it to be. And I think that was very evident during the recall, what led up to the recall. Rachel Maddow and Lawrence O'Donnell would be talking about things happening in Madison or in Wisconsin that just were not happening. They wanted it to be that way, but it really wasn't that way. And I wonder if there's just kind of a, we're convincing ourselves that this is how it is, and so we report it as fact.
Joan, I think there's some validity in that comment.
Well, you know, I'm not, without you know, talking about a specific thing that didn't happen or whatever, I'm not aware of anybody, you know, reporting things that didn't happen. I will certainly grant that there were people, and I would count myself among them, who were more optimistic than they perhaps should have been mm-hmm. about the chances of the recall succeeding. So, I plead guilty, frankly, to believing that there was more strength to it than there was. And I think that people really, in hindsight, the polls showing that, I think, Kathleen, you know, help me out if I get this number wrong, but something like 70% of people just really didn't think that there should have been a recall
right.
for anything other
right.
than official, you know, actual malfeasance in office.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there probably should have been a lot more debate and scrutiny about the whole tactic. From a distance, I'm sure some of us, were overly optimistic in a way that I can only speak for myself. That I regretted afterwards, but I don't think nobody's making anything up.
The same could be said for conservative media, that there may be a tendency, the presidential election last go around, the people on Fox couldn't believe that President Obama was going to be reelected to the margin that he was, with Karl Rove, you know, holding the whole thing up at the end. That maybe it points to a lack of really very thorough, very, very careful reporting on the numbers.
Well, yeah, I think I don't really like to equate MSNBC with Fox, because Fox is run by a Republican Party operative, Roger Ailes, with an explicit agenda, and MSNBC, there's just no comparison. You know, MSNBC has Joe Scarborough. MSNBC has more dissenting voices than Fox does.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, sure, I think we can all fall victim to that. I think there was also an attempt on the part of MSNBC to cover an undercover story, and to take seriously activism at the state level, but that should never turn into cheerleading. And, I'm only going to speak for myself. I'm not, you know, I think Lawrence and Rachel did and do a very good job. I'll speak for myself and say, you know, I should have probably been a little bit more sober about it. Certainly regret not taking the excuse to go to Wisconsin to report from the ground, you know, which I later did do for the, you know, at the end of the presidential race and saw how close it was, but also, that the Obama people and the Wisconsin Democrats had a very good operation going in Wisconsin. And mm-hmm. I felt confident that it would narrowly go for the president, which it did. So, you know, you can't really ever substitute for being on the ground and trying to do clear-eyed reporting.
Yeah. Right. Thanks, Tom, for the call. Jim in Milwaukee. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I hope that people will grab a piece of paper and a pen, and I've got some three ideas of ways that people can fight back a bit. One thing is in terms of the matter of Walker and the salability of the issue, just remember that in both with Walker and Christie, they pick these leaders that act in the despicable ways that they do. And in the case of Walker, you know, he picks people that are clearly bigoted and ignorant and out of touch, people we might characterize as Elmer Fuddites. They're so out of touch with what's going on in the world. Secondly, we could take this idea that took place in Arizona and extend it nationwide to other states and other issues. For example, I called a number 1-800-Buckeye, which deals with tourism in the state of Ohio, and I told them that my wife and I were not going to visit the state of Ohio or do any business there until they stopped discriminating against minorities in terms of getting the vote out. So there are ways that we can help other states and have them help us in terms of using boycotts.
Let's talk about Arizona, if you don't mind, Jim, while we're on this, and Ohio. Jan Brewer in the state of Arizona got a whole lot of feedback about that law, didn't they? Joan?
Yes, she did. And, you know, I think that people have been very successful in using the power of business, the power of tourist dollars. Arizona is certainly a big tourist state. And marshaling those resources and saying we're not going to patronize places that are so blatantly discriminating, and it worked. You know, she really had to listen to the business community and you know, lots of Republicans heard the message and backed her too. She was not going out on her own at that point. And I think we've had a harder time doing that on other fronts. On the other hand, you know, I think that a lot of our issues are more complicated and business may even be divided more. You know, business, not discriminating against gay people is very, very important. It doesn't really cost business anything to do that. Raising the minimum wage costs them something, you know. So the economic issues have proven to be more divisive in terms of the business community than the social issues. And I think that's an interesting problem that we've kind of got to get our minds around.
Mm-hmm. Jim, I'm sorry, you want to pick up with one more thing? Then we have to pledge, sir, if you don't mind.
Yeah, one quick thing.
Sure.
Do some Googling of Alan Stewart property damage from fracking, and you'll find some fascinating stuff in terms of what went on in the establishment of the fracking laws that relate both to Texas and fracking nationwide.
Joan, you want to comment on fracking?
I think there's an interesting, you know, movement against it. And, you know, again, a lot of people who might profit from it don't want it in their backyard. So, mm-hmm. you know, lots of literal and figurative fractures to be working on this issue.
Thanks, Jim, so much for your call. Joan Walsh is our guest this hour for All Things Political. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, and feel free to call. We'd like to hear from you, actually. We're also in our last day of our winter membership drive. KP Whaley is joining me in our studios. And you must know by now that, at least I hope you do, listeners provide the single largest piece of our budget, and it's why your gift is so important right now. This final day, it's the final day for you to pledge to All Things Political. All you political junkies, you call. This is your hour. So please make your call right now. And to encourage your gift today on this last day of our pledge drive, your pledge of any amount automatically enters you in a drawing for an iPad Air. So make your gift right now. Here's how you do it, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we're looking for 27 more pledges in the next, half hour, Kathleen, right?
We can do this, yes.
I think we can do it.
I think so, too.
It's all these pledges that help pay for the programs you count on all year round, just like this one, All Things Political. If you're a fan, now's the time to make your pledge. We want to thank you if you've already given. If you haven't, go now to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio is an incredible resource. It keeps you informed and entertained every single day. You enjoy this program and many others, Joy Cardine Show, Larry Mueller Show, all kinds of other programs that you've come to rely on.
And it gives you this window into a world like no others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, support the exciting mix of shows that you enjoy here on the station with your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's very easy to pledge to WPR. When you become a sustainer, you can really simplify your donation. You make automatic monthly gifts from your bank account or credit card.
And that support will renew automatically each year, so your membership is always current. It's very easy for you, and you can pick the amount that works for you. Say it's $10 a month. Say it's $100 a month. But that will help you become a sustainer, and you can do that now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might think that Wisconsin Public Radio operates largely with tax dollars, and we do get funding from the federal government and from the state, but listener contributions make up the single largest source of our income.
And I think we appreciate the fact that, that's the way it is.
We
don't want to necessarily rely on government funding and state funding. Make your support vital to keeping Wisconsin Public Radio on the air. Pledge now. You know how important listener support is. Make a pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I listen to all kinds of topics. Every topic you can think of, I'm very interested in. It could be history, could be writing, could be health, could be politics, art, creativity. I'm interested in everything. And what I really love is the call-ins, questions, and comments, because you really do feel like you're part of a community of learners. I just think it's great. You feel like you're really going to school when you're driving in your car. You can be multitasking. You can be doing the dishes, folding laundry, and still be part of a community of people who really value knowledge. I'm Diane Ryan from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for connecting with the greater Wisconsin community.
Go to WPR.org, 888-202-2552. It's the last hour for all things political, and actually the last afternoon of our winter membership drive. I'm Kathleen Dunn with KP Whaley, and we are asking for your support of WPR, and this program in particular, your gift of $10 or $15 a month, whatever amount you choose. It's A-OK. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And thank you to our sustaining members who give us a monthly amount. And thanks to everyone who's given so far this drive. If you haven't pledged yet, there's still time left, but not much. Our winter membership drive ends at 6 o'clock tonight, and you can choose the amount. The important thing is that you make your commitment right now. Go to support the programs you count on here, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And thank you so much. Thank you, KP. Joan Walsh is our guest. It's All Things Political for this Monday, the 3rd of March. Our on-air phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. You mentioned minimum wage, Joan. Do you see any possibility of an increase to, say, $10.10 for minimum wage before this year ends?
Oh, I hate to be a downer, Kathleen, but, you know, the Republican Party has gotten so extreme on this. You've even got people coming out and saying maybe we shouldn't have a minimum wage at all, let alone an increase. So I really think that the coalition behind this really is crumbling. And with this particular, you know, House GOP majority, you know, I don't see it happening.
What about immigration reform?
John Boehner continues to make noises in front of different groups that he's open to it, but he doesn't move on it. And, some of my optimistic liberal friends on this get fooled and say, okay, it's alive again. And there's a little bit of that today. Apparently he made some encouraging noises to some group. But I think that they really have pretty much declared that the time for governing is over and that they really want to focus on politics and what they think are going to be wedge issues during the midterms.
So what is alive, if anything?
I'm probably not allowed to say this because we're all supposed to act like, you know, there's some possibility of change and cover things like we can count votes and this is the next big issue. But I don't really see anything. There are no crises. As long as there are no crises looming, like the fiscal cliff or the debt ceiling, we've gotten past that nonsense, which is a good thing. I'm not really sure that anything can get done in this session. I know, it's depressing.
Let's go to Rick in La Crosse. Hi, Rick.
Hi. No, I just saw a documentary a few years back. Les États-Unis à la conquête de l'Est, the United States and the conquest of the East, and about the color-coded revolutions in the East and all that, and how the U.S. really wants to overthrow a lot of governments and wants to, like, penetrate the Russian sphere of influence. And I'd like your author to comment on that. And also Venezuela. It seems that National Public Radio has a thing for Venezuela. It seems almost caricature. But, you know, it's like NPR is like Team USA, you know. It's like you don't respect other countries. I mean, look at Victoria Nuland and what she said, you know, forget the EU, and I'm euphemizing here, but you know what I'm talking about. So, comment on that. And I really regret the lack of information on the major media in the United States about the actual interests of the U.S. government in these countries.
All right. Thank you very much for the call, Rick. Let's start with Russia, and we're going to do a full show on this. I know you're politically domestic oriented here, but this is turning into, I don't know, it seems like the Cold War again, doesn't it, the last couple days?
Oh, it really does. And, you know, I mean, it's incredibly complicated, and the caller raises very, you know, important issues. But right now, again, it's sort of being fed into our ridiculous partisan divide with, you know, people like Lindsey Graham and John McCain blaming the president for this when, you know, there's only one person you can blame at this point, and that's Putin. And I think that it's going to be a matter of incredible global, international, all hands on deck diplomacy, and there's no obvious move for the president to make at this point. And the idea that there's something he did or could have done that he did to make it worse or he could do to, you know, quickly make it better is kind of like childish magical thinking. We wish we had that kind of control over the situation, but, you know, we clearly don't.
Mm-hmm. Things happen so rapidly, don't they? It was only a couple weeks ago Russia was getting some praise. The Sochi Olympics went off pretty well. There weren't any incidents. The security was okay. And then a week later, holy Toledo, look what happens.
Well, yeah. And, you know, it's pretty clear that Putin is determined to sort of reassert a larger sphere of influence and is going to do it militarily. And it's also clear that, you know, that the West is divided in exactly how to deal with it. But for now, it's a diplomatic game, and I hope it stays that way because I don't know who wins if it becomes a military game. But mm-hmm. it's really complicated, and we're mainly getting, you know, partisan sloganeering at mm-hmm. this point.
You mentioned, Joan, that you didn't think a whole lot was going to be done legislatively because people are focused on the elections, which all of a sudden aren't very long away, right? I mean, November will be here before you know it. When you think about vulnerable Senate seats, do you think there are enough of them that the Democrats have serious concern about losing the Senate?
Oh, I think numerically, you know, I think they do. I think they've got some vulnerable you know, Senate seats in pretty red states, and that you know that they cannot afford to. I think numerically they are vulnerable. I think that, you know, it'll be interesting to see whether once again Republicans help Democrats by nominating crazy Tea Party folks. You know, in Georgia, that looks like it could be a pickup. Conceivably be a pickup for Democrats. I don't want to get into cheerleading again or wishful thinking, but, you know, Michelle Dunn's a decent candidate, and she will face, she's likely to face kind of a, you know, far-right crackpot. But I don't know that there are going to be as many of those mistakes as there were in 2010 and 2012. So I definitely think they're vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes to 2016, which does seem much farther away to me, our guest last week for All Things Political kind of surprised me because he thought that the nominee was going to be Ted Cruz.
I don't think that. You know, I've been wrong before, but you know, you have to take him seriously because he is very smart and he is a favorite of the base. He scratches a lot of itches for the Republican base. But at the same time, he's really made himself incredibly unpopular among, you know, elected Republicans. He's a very, very divisive figure. I think it's it's possible he could become a strong force on the right. You know, one of the things we talked a little before about somebody like Chris Christie or Scott Walker. I mean, I consider Scott Walker well to the right, but some people consider him a little bit more pragmatic. There's going to be a Tea Party primary. There will probably be a Tea Party primary. Part of how Mitt Romney became the nominee, even though he was, you know, comparatively moderate for the party, is that a lot of folks on the right decided to run against each other. They split that vote and let Romney, you know, steadily week after week in the primary season accumulate delegates, pick off a few states, and suddenly he was never the front runner. You know, we had a series of front runners, laughable front runners like Michelle Bachmann or, you know, Herman Cain briefly. But the right-wing people, you know, took pot shots at each other, and Romney wound up winning the nomination. Now, if the people on the right, if there's not a whole lot of people running, if you know, Rand Paul doesn't run against Ted Cruz, then Cruz consolidates that Tea Party base. But if you have several Tea Party people and you've got, you know, Rand Paul is kind of a loose cannon and kind of a crackpot and has some racial questions of his own in his hiring white supremacists, et cetera. But, you know, he'd be a formidable person building on his father's base and his own Senate seat. If he runs and Ted Cruz runs, they could, you know, they could do each other a lot of damage and clear the way for a moderate. But it's wide open. So I don't think your guess isn't crazy. Somebody, I keep saying that this person and that person isn't going to get the nomination. And yet, at the end of the day, somebody is going to get the nomination. So one of these times I'm going to be wrong, Kathleen. Not very often, but...
Not very often at all, Joan. All right, let's come back home for the last couple of minutes that we have here, where you went to high school and you went to college as well. And I know that the issue of race is very near and dear to you. You wrote a book about this whole issue. And I'd like for you to take on this issue, because I'm sure you've thought about it long and hard. Why we have so many problems with race in the state of Wisconsin, particularly in the Milwaukee area?
Oh, wow. Oh, you know, it's so vexing to me because, you know, I have so many great friends there. And I don't experience it personally as any more racist than other places. But a lot of decisions have been made over time. You know, there were zoning decisions and, even the question of light rail sounds as far from a racial issue as possible, right? But even the issue of light rail and transportation and mass transit issues have made it very difficult for, you know, Milwaukee's African-American population to suburbanize as much as other places have in the country. There's been a, you know, lots of cities have seen an exodus of their black population to the suburbs, as there have been either, you know, more opportunities, jobs in the suburbs, you know, lots of different, more affordable housing in the suburbs, and Milwaukee never saw that. And one reason, you know, there were some deliberate reasons, and I think that, you know, Scott Walker being such a foe of light rail is of a piece with, you know, decisions that have been made over the years to make it harder for people to have mobility. And there's just been a real concentration of poverty and a departure of jobs that has led to, you know, a profound sense of inequity. And then just, you know, geographic barriers just get reinforced. And you know, voting, there was a nationwide kind of white backlash that, you know, we talked about this. You were a wonderful interviewer when my book came out, talking about a sense of, you know, a white backlash that was partly to do with race, certainly, but was also to do with the fear of change and the fear of the rioting and the world becoming, you know, seemingly a less safe place. Mm-hmm. And genuine, you know, genuine concerns about the economy changing, et cetera, that sometimes got sort of forced into the into categories of race, but weren't necessarily, you know, racist. But you know, Wisconsin had that kind of backlash in the 70s too, and you know, it's been an issue that's been very, very hard to address. But you know, I think that going back to Scott Walker's policies as county executive, the concerns and the needs of the city's growing poor population were just not to put it mildly, they weren't at the top of the agenda. And there was a deliberate sense of neglect. And he didn't pay for that politically, and he might have in other places. Mm-hmm. And it's a real concern.
Joan, thank you. Next time you're in town, come and see us. We'll have you in the studio and have some coffee.
I would love to do that.
Great.
I'll definitely let you know.
Thanks, Joan. Thank you so much. Joan Walsh, our guest for All Things Political, editor at large of Salon.com, author of What's the Matter with White People? Finding Our Way in the Next America. She is on MSNBC frequently as a commentator, trying to bring Wisconsin issues to the green room of MSNBC, which sometimes is a losing battle. She's a graduate of Shorewood High School and got her bachelor's in history at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm Kathleen Dunn. KP Whaley is joining me in our Milwaukee studios. And today is, the last day of our winter membership drive. And this is our last hour to ask you to support All Things Political. Your support does make high-quality, commercial-free programs on WPR possible. And a reminder that when you pledge today, you'll be entered in a drawing for an iPad Air. It's a great time to support the programs that you value, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yes, help pay for the programs like the Kathleen Dunn Show or All Things Political and all of the great programming here on WPR. Help make that possible. We're looking still for 15 more pledges in the next, 10 minutes?
Right.
10 minutes to go, so we need more than one a minute. you can do that now. Go quickly to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've been enjoying the conversation with Joan Walsh about Wisconsin topics, about the governor, about minimum wage and the Ukraine. This hour, we do this every Monday at 1, and it's an example of our political focus. It continues beyond Mondays, but you can always count on Mondays at 1. Great guest, great political conversation.
And now just take a few minutes to make this very hour and many more hours possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you and your budget, and then go make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you can, share your passion for WPR by making a pledge of $100 a month. We rely on member support, your support, to make great radio.
Yeah, your gift of $100 a month or $1,200 for the year is so very helpful. And of course, every pledge, no matter the amount, is appreciated. And it makes you a member here at WPR.org. Or please call 888-202-2552 and make your pledge.
I like Wisconsin Public Radio because the programming is excellent. I feel like being a listener and a contributor that it helps me be a little more in control of what's over the airwaves. Wisconsin Public Radio is important because all of us as a community are contributing and helping to make sure that we get balanced coverage on news and also a very positive listening environment. I find humor and I love the political discussion that covers both sides of the issues, and I think that's really important. I'm Amy Kocha from Green Bay, and I encourage you to join me in sustaining Wisconsin Public Radio.
Make your donation in support of the programs that you count on, WPR.org, 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn with KP Whaley in our studios in Milwaukee asking for your gift to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. Last day of the winter membership drive, $5 a month, $100 a month. We do appreciate and we count on your gift.
And, you know, we really love new pledgers, first-time pledgers. We've picked up 15 people
Wonderful. Thank you, everybody, who
are pledging for this first time. And if you've never given before, but you look forward to listening to WPR every day, that's a sign that it's time to donate. So it means that WPR is important to you.
And you're important to us because we're listener-supported radio, so we count on financial support from people like you, people who rely on WPR, to bring them something special every day. Your gift of $5 a month or whatever amount feels right to you, it makes you a member of WPR and really does make a difference. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, pledge times are time to really celebrate the quality of the programming here on Wisconsin Public Radio. You listen because you enjoy the programs and the quality. And now we're asking you to back up that feeling with your financial support.
A reminder that you support, you provide the single largest piece of our budget. So all of the programs that you enjoy every day are possible thanks to that significant piece of the budget pie. So give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we're still looking for 14 more pledges in the next 5 minutes. So make your pledge now to help keep this program going strong. Make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
A nice way to look at this is a gift to WPR is a gift through Wisconsin Public Radio to the community. You enjoy this radio station, and many others do as well.
Yeah, make your pledge now for yourself and for your community at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we're looking for 14 more pledges during the next about 6 minutes and 13 seconds. It's the last day of our winter membership drive. Give now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And if you're a fan of all things political,
yes,
this is your last opportunity.
This is the hour.
Please go now to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And a reminder that we've got this iPad drawing. And it's, and so pledge now. It's a good thing to do. Thanks.